Hello everyone, this is LinguaCast, a series of podcasts on the joy of language learning from Brass House Languages at the Library of Birmingham. Hello everyone and welcome to another LinguaCast. My name is Pascalina and today I will be joined by John Bishop. John has been a learner of Greek at Brass House Languages for many years. He will share with us his story as a language learner and discuss how he has benefited from language learning, as well as what he enjoys most about it. In the end, we are also going to answer the question, will there be toilets on Delos? So stay with us to find out. Γεια σου, John. Καλώς ήρθες στο LinguaCast.
Γεια σου, Λίνα. Καλησπέρα. Τι κάνεις?
Καλά, ευχαριστώ. Και εσύ?
Ναι, καλά, καλά. Ευχαριστώ.
Πολύ ωραία. Thank you very much for accepting the invitation and for being with us today. It's a pleasure. Well, we have known each other for many years. Would you like, though, to provide some information about yourself so that our listeners will get to know you a bit better?
Yes, I'm retired now in order to see more of the Greek islands. But for 30 plus years, I worked in education, initially as an English teacher and latterly as principal of Josiah Mason College in Erdington. Over the years, I'd always written short articles that rarely got published. When I got to 60, I decided to write something longer that would probably rarely be published.
Great. Now, would you like to talk a bit about how you got interested in languages? When did you start learning languages and why? And also, which languages do you speak apart from Greek, if any?
Well, I did Latin and Greek and French at school. You could hardly say learn them as languages. They were academic subjects like physics. I'm not a natural linguist, and I got into learning Greek because I was going to Greece quite a lot and increasingly to more out-of-the-way places and felt I needed to learn Greek. Initially, I had a Berlitz tape in the car, which really wasn't very effective. And so in either 1998 or 99, I came to the Brass House and it was just wow, you know, the difference between listening to a tape or learning online and having a live teacher who could correct you instantly and bring the whole thing to life. It just made a difference. And so I'm still here trying to learn. There was, it's probably out of print now, a book many years ago called Learn Greek in 25 Years. And if you failed after 25 years, you were guaranteed your money back. And I've been hoping that I could manage that, but unfortunately the Brass House is so good that I think I'll probably fail to get my money back.
Let's mention here, though, that you are an advanced learner of Greek. You have been in the advanced course for many years now. So I would say, as a teacher and as your teacher, that you have achieved your goal and now you just go beyond this. You go further. Let's put it like this. That would be my approach to your experience from my side. Great. So throughout all these years of learning a language, how do you think that you have been benefited as an individual? How this has helped you?
First of all, I think it helps with your confidence when you're in Greece, being aware of what's around you. I mean, obviously, with the Greek alphabet, if you're not familiar, it can all seem rather puzzling. Particularly the more you go off the beaten track, you can go to places that, you know, tourists wouldn't perhaps ordinarily go. And you also come across people and experiences that can open your eyes. One that comes to mind is some years ago in Crete, I came across a little old man who was sitting by the side of the road with his case, waiting to go for a doctor's appointment. And when he realized I was English and we spoke a bit of Greek, he got very excited and said he was 90 years old and told me quite graphically how he'd once shot a German in the chest during the war. So, you know, that's not the sort of thing you would normally come across in tourist areas. And the Greek enables you a way into that. But I think the other benefit more broadly of learning Greek is in building bridges. You're not just some tourist who swans in to the country and goes out. You are communicating with people. And it's also a courtesy, I think. It's a mark of respect. The English traditionally have not been good in this respect. You know, if they don't understand you, shout louder. And we tend not to build bridges, but that's one of the benefits of speaking Greek, is that you can do that. And very interesting and, you know, beneficial to you yourself, apart from the wider context.
Great. I particularly liked the phrasing you used. I mean, building bridges, which is one of the most important and exciting things when we learn a foreign language. And also, the other point you made about speaking the language opens the door to a different world, which you probably wouldn't have the chance to access without this knowledge. And I'm referring to the story you told us earlier about the old Cretan man. That's great. What do you enjoy most when you learn a language? When you learned, what have you been enjoying most all these years when learning Greek, actually? And have there been different things that you enjoyed depending on the different stages you have been regarding learning the language?
Yes, I think in many ways the most enjoyable part is actually using the language and seeing people's reaction when you use the language. I mean, I've had people say to me, "Thank you for speaking our language." And quite often saying, "Oh, you speak good Greek," when you've ordered a coffee or something, which is quite touching because it shows how often, you know, people don't bother. But also other learners' experiences are a very important part. You will probably remember Joanna, who was in our class up to a few years ago when she died at the age of 92. And her story is about how she'd learned various, sometimes dubious words in Greece, and her travels to Greece on the magic bus after she'd been widowed in the late 60s. It's just amazing. And there's such a lot like that. But there's also the wider cultural experience of the films that we've seen, the books that we've come across, the music, of course, and it widens the whole context of learning. It's not just a language flat on the page. It comes to life and enriches everything, really.
That's true. And I'll take the chance to say that also that's very true, your last point. And I'm glad to hear that you mentioned it's not just a language class, but it's something wider. And also on my part, I will say that as a teacher, I have benefited also a lot from teaching you and your classmates, especially in this advanced group throughout the years. And we very often, we the language teachers say that we get to know, to explore our language and culture further through the interaction with our learners and through our learners' eyes. And this is something that happened all these years. And I want to believe that it was beneficial and enjoyable for both sides. I'm glad that you mentioned Ioana because she was an amazing person, an amazing woman, and I think that she was a very good example regarding how to put it, the fact that there are no limits, age limits, or other limits when it comes to language learning. As you said, she was 90 or 91 years old. That was the first time I met her when I started teaching your group many years ago. And unfortunately, she died, she must have died 1 year or two later after that. So I didn't get to spend so much time with her, but I think it was amazing, her enthusiasm and her energy and the way she was bringing this enthusiasm and energy to the class. It was something that impressed me a lot at the time. And it's lovely that we got to remember her, but also I think she's a very, very good example of how you can learn a language despite your age, despite what's happening in other aspects of your life and all this. Great. So now, in the introduction to this podcast earlier, I promised that we will answer the question, will there be toilets on Delos? Do you want to explain what this is about?
Well, I'm not sure that I'm going to give the answer now, but I can explain about it. It was a lockdown project, really. I'd written three novels some years earlier, but decided that was it. And then during lockdown, I decided to put together a book about my travels around, I think it's about 60 Greek islands. And the title of this book is Will There Be Toilets on Delos? With the subtitle, A Personal Guide to the Greek Islands for the Nervous Traveller, i.e. me. The intention was, it was a vanity project really, to produce it, to give it away to people who wanted it and might be interested in it. And probably the best bit is the bibliography of other books about Greece and the Greek islands. But that's all it is, really. It's an account of islands that I've been to and things I've come across. I wouldn't say it's a major Greek tourist guide, but it's personal.
That's true. I must say at this point that this is a different yet brilliant guide to the Greek islands, full of stories and anecdotes, but also full of your love and enthusiasm about Greek islands. And at the same time, the topic is approached with a brilliant sense of humor, which makes the reading of the book a real pleasure. I've got myself laughing and giggling many times as I was reading it, and I strongly recommend it to anyone who is interested in a different travel guide and interested in Greek islands. You mentioned earlier that you have also published a few novels. One of them, it's about the Second World, the Second World War resistance in Crete, under the title Love, Freedom or Death. Would you like to talk about this a bit?
Yes. That was really the first book I wrote, and it started off as a film script because this was 2006, and Crete in particular was still living off the film of Zorba the Greek, which came out 45 years earlier. So I'd been to Crete many times by then and wanted to give something back. And I thought a film would actually show the country. Now, so I started writing a film script, and unless you live in Los Angeles and have close relatives who are senior figures in the film industry, it's probably one of the most futile human activities ever invented, but also extremely fascinating. And I worked on this with help from somebody who became a friend in London. And we went through about 15 drafts. And eventually I realized it wasn't going anywhere. It won a prize at the preliminary stage of some Los Angeles film competition, which is really the equivalent of a children's party where everyone gets a prize. But it was going nowhere. So I decided to convert it into a novel. The title pays tribute to the Kazantzakis novel, Freedom and Death, which is very powerful, and also to the slogan on the flag of the Cretan resistance against the Turks, Freedom or Death. But I thought I'd put some love in as well. And it's based on a true story, well, loosely, of a New Zealander who was in the Battle of Crete, was left behind, eventually got back to Egypt, and then returned and ended up leading a resistance group. And again, very enjoyable to write. It's probably sold a few hundred copies, and main thing I'm pleased to say is that there's one bookshop in the world that sells it, which is the Mediterraneo bookshop on the front in Hanya. And there's some copies on display, and there's me, and next to me is Evelyn Waugh. So I'm at last.
That's great to hear, and a great honor, I assume, for your book to be sold in Chania and in Crete, which is one of your favorite islands, as far as I know. You really love the island and got to know its history. I didn't remember that bit about the film script. Now that you mention it, it rings a bell. And you have also published two more novels, if I'm not wrong, this time not on a Greek topic, but would you like to let us know briefly about them as well?
Well, the first one is called the Chinese attack, and it's based not at all on, in fact, and because one of my grandfathers was a sergeant with the Chinese Labour Battalion in France in the First World War, almost a forgotten story. And he died when I was nine, so I never got to talk to him about it. I inherited a couple of picture paintings that were apparently done by the labourers. But I thought this was an opportunity to recreate something. Again, it didn't particularly sell, but I met some fascinating people because in the early years of the centenary of the war, there was a push from the Chinese community to have this more widely known, and came across people because of that. And then I wanted to write three novels and then give up. And so the third one is called Refuse to Forget, which is mainly about a group of women who went to France with a mobile ambulance, having been told by the War Office to, you know, go home and keep quiet, leave it to us. And because I couldn't tell it through a middle-aged aristocratic woman, it's told by a boy who at the time was 15 and managed to get over there by luck and accident. But I was principally interested in how the war started, because nobody wanted it, and it, we just stumbled into it, and then all hell broke loose. And so again, very enjoyable activity, but probably somewhere in the worst sellers lists.
Well, then, this brings me to the next point. If anyone would like to get a copy of your books now, would they be able to get one? And if so, how?
Well, if people are studying at the Brass House, I can bring along a number to leave with you. Bit of a treat. But that's probably the easiest way to get one. Failing that, if I provide my email address, they can email me and I'll send them one. No charge.
That's great. Thank you so much, John. Thank you very much, particularly for our interesting and inspiring conversation. I don't know whether you would like to add anything before we end this conversation.
Just one thing about the Will There Be Toilets on Delos book. I gave copies out to people who came on the Greek summer school this summer. And one lady, I think it was Julia, took it home and she came back the next morning and said, "You nearly caused a divorce with your book," because she'd started reading it and couldn't stop, and was reading it even in bed. And when her husband wanted to talk to her, she said, "Shut up, I'm reading this book." So that is a health warning if anyone wants the book.
That's great to hear. That's a huge compliment, I think. That's a huge compliment. And I can confirm that if you start, you can't easily put it down, indeed. That's great to hear. I didn't know this. So good to know. And I'm pleased for you, because this is a really enjoyable book, a really enjoyable account. But at the same time, as I said, with lots of information in it. Fantastic. Thank you so much for this conversation, John. I hope that our listeners enjoyed it. If you want to hear more from us, make sure that you subscribe to our podcast on Buzzsprout, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and other platforms. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Links provided in the podcast notes in this episode. Ευχαριστώ πολύ, John. Γεια σου.
Γεια σου. Ευχαριστώ. Καλησπέρα.
Καλό απόγευμα. Thank you all for listening. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening. It was LinguaCast, a series of podcasts on the joy of language learning from Brass House Languages at the Library of Birmingham.